Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, and welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Today we're joined by Lisa Johnson. Lisa, Dane County UW Extension horticulture educator. She's been with us many times, and always great to have her here. She specializes in horticulture education for the home gardener and for horticulture professionals in the green industry. So it's, again, great to have her along. Certainly, if you have questions as we move along today about your own landscape, what's going on out there in the flower garden, probably not a whole lot right now, or the vegetable garden, but you may have some questions. There are lots of things that we can talk about, certainly, in terms of planting and pruning and all kinds of things. So give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@wpr.org. And you could even post something on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, so we wouldn't mind that either. Lisa, welcome back.
Thank you, Larry.
Good to have you back. What kinds of questions are you getting these days from folks?
I've been getting some questions about when things can be planted outside, pruning questions, a few questions about we'd like to plant a garden and have no idea what we're doing. Where do we find resources?
So all kinds. And I see we already have an email from Dave. Speaking of pruning, Dave in Menominee Falls wondering, when is the best time to prune raspberry bushes? Is it okay to prune now? And how do I do it?
Okay, yeah. Raspberry bushes, the best time to prune them is when they're dormant. And they should still be dormant now. If you're in Wisconsin anyway,
yeah,
they should
sure.
still be dormant. He's in Menominee Falls. So yeah that shouldn't be a problem. What you do is, if you've got the traditional raspberries that fruit in the summer, you take out to the ground level all the canes that fruited last year, and you leave the new ones that have not fruited for this year. And you trim the ones remaining back about a fourth at the top. That's to encourage more branching and more fruiting for this season. If you have the ever-bearing type, you can cut them all back to the ground at this point.
Okay. And how about patio rose? Rebecca has a rather large patio rose bush, which she normally trims way back every fall. Didn't get to do it before the snow started last fall. I'm wondering if she can trim it now, or should she wait until after the first bloom is done?
Definitely while it's still dormant. You want to cut off anything that is dead, and you cut it back till you see that the inside of the stem is white on the inside. If it's brown, it's either dead or diseased, so you want to get rid of it. You want to make sure that when you're pruning that any branches or buds that point towards the inside of the bush that would cause branches to grow inside and cross and impede airflow and so on, you take those out. You want the outward-facing buds to be encouraged to grow. You do want to do that while the plant is still dormant.
Let's turn to Brett in Green Bay next. Brett, hello.
Hello. I heard about the raspberries. My question was about trimming down the raspberries and how do you differentiate between the ever-bearing and the regular ones. I'm sure mine are ever-bearing. I mean, they go spring, summer, fall. Also, I was wondering, I wanted to transplant them. What is the best way or best time to transplant them?
Okay.
All right. They can be transplanted in the spring. That's the best time to do it.
Okay.
And your other question was about the...
How to tell the difference.
Between ever-bearing. It sounds like you do have ever-bearing. The traditional summer-bearing ones don't usually start until early July around the Madison area anyway.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Thanks, Brett, for calling. Jim and Van Dyne, we go to you now. Hi, Jim.
Yes, good morning.
Morning.
And thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have some blackberries that I just planted last year, a half dozen plants or so. They seem to really like their location. It's basically full sun. And my question is, I don't really understand how they're going to reproduce. Will they be like a black raspberry so that the canes have to come down, or are they going to come up from the roots? I'm not sure what to expect and how to handle them, and I thought you might be able to give me some advice.
They are very similar to black raspberries, and they'll reproduce both ways. They have a bud that's at the slightly under the ground, and that's where they send up new canes, as well as if a cane happens to hit the ground, it often will root in place as well. So you should be getting both.
Should they be pruned back then in a year or so, like the raspberries, I'm assuming?
I believe so. I'm not as familiar with blackberries. They've been kind of marginal in our area, so I haven't grown them personally. But I think that you do follow the same procedures with the black raspberry. But you might want to check out our publication on... let's see. I think it's called Berries for the Home Garden, something on that order.
Let's go to the UW Extension Learning Store. What is it? Learningstore.uwex.edu.
All right. I appreciate that very much.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And we have Susan emailing us, who says, we put some horse manure on our garden last fall, but we didn't till it in. Did we make a big mistake?
No, I assume this is a vegetable garden. I'm hoping also that the horse manure was composted. If not, over the winter, you've probably had some of the composting process
done.
Yeah, with all the snow and so on. You just till it in. If you haven't got it spread out, do spread it and then just till it in, and that'll be a nice organic amendment to your soil.
Noel and Genesee, on to you now. Hi, Noel.
Well, good morning. How are you?
Great. Thank you for calling.
Good. This is a first-time call, but the reason I'm calling is I have what they call a yucca plant.
Oh. Oh.
I mean, it has foliage all year long. Mm-hmm. I have dug 2 feet down, two mm-hmm. feet wide, have taken everything out and looked at the green, you know, at the brown dirt, and lo and behold, not even but 4 months later, the little fella's back up there again.
Yeah, they've got roots that go very deep, and they're very tough to eradicate. Did you try cutting off the stems and then applying something like Roundup?
No, I didn't know what to do, because, I mean, I just didn't want to, you know, upset the nature, of course, on the grass there, so I didn't know what to do. I've just kind of watched it creeping up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you dig it out again.
Beautiful winter.
Oh, man.
Well, you can continue on the course that you're continuing on, but it may take you a couple more years to get rid of it. If you're vigilant and every time it comes up, if you take care of it, eventually you'll get rid of it. Or you can cut it almost to the ground, maybe like 3 inches above the ground, and then on the cut edges and on any green material, you can apply some Roundup.
Okay.
And you can do that with a paintbrush. You don't need to spray it. And hopefully that is a systemic product, so it should go through the leaves, through the roots, and kill the roots. I am not aware of another product out there that you might use, but that one's probably the most ecologically friendly of the mm-hmm. Herbicide systemic products.
The plant deserves its name.
Yucca. All right.
Yucca, yucca.
Thanks, Noel. Thanks for calling. You can join in, too, by the way, with your gardening question at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. We have Norma in Waukesha up next. Let's go there. Hi, Norma.
Hi. Thank you very much.
Sure.
I recently moved into an apartment, so I don't do a whole lot of gardening anymore. So I'm going to have to be doing container gardening. Mm-hmm. And my question is it all right just to use all potting soil, or should I use some kind of dirt, you know, the natural dirt with it? Or What's the best thing to use in pots?
With containers, it's better to use the commercial potting material. Our soil tends to turn into a brick in pots, and plants don't typically like that. I've seen a number of sad specimens that have been brought into me over the years, and I'm like, well, your plant is growing in a brick. That's why it's not doing well. So, yeah, I would use the bagged soil. Do make sure, though, that you apply fertilizers. You can either use organic fertilizers. You could mix in some compost if you'd like. That would be fine. Or you can use something like Miracle-Gro because those commercial potting products, unless they say they've got a slow-release fertilizer in them, don't have much nutrition for the plant.
I just wanted to quick mention that I was able to make a tour of the basketball player that has that urban gardening in Milwaukee.
Oh, Will Allen at Growing Power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I bought some of his
worm compost.
The worm stuff, the worm fertilizer.
It's pretty. That's a great organic amendment. That would work real well in your pots.
Yeah.
This is just a thing. It's I can add it with water.
Yep.
And use, they call it liquid worm nasty.
Okay. Sure.
Okay. I really enjoy this program, even though I don't do much gardening anymore. I think it's fun to listen to.
All right. Well, thank you very much for calling. And you know what, Norma and Lisa, I'm going to try and get Will. We're working on getting him on the show, so it'll be fun to have him on sometime to talk about what he does in Milwaukee and gardening, urban gardening.
You know, Growing Power has a branch here in Madison, Growing Power of Madison, with Robert Pierce from the Southside Madison Farmers Market.
Yeah, maybe get them both on.
That'd be fun.
That'd be fun. Chris in West Bend, we're on to you now. Hi, Chris.
Hi. Say, I've got one of those potted poodle arborvitas and trees.
Yeah.
And over the winter, I've noticed that I've got some rusting kind of all over the plant, what I would term as rusting. And I'm curious if this plant is just going to, the tree is just going to die, or if I should take it out, trim the roots, or if there's anything that you think I could do, pruning?
Well, you can try pruning it. It sounds like winter burn to me, which is pretty common on those types of plants, especially if they've gotten a lot of winter sun and their roots are confined in a pot. What you can do with that kind of thing, if I assume it is in a pot?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Is move it into a shady area over the winter and also make sure that it gets watered really well before the ground freezes. What tends to happen with winter burn is that the sun comes out, it shines on the foliage comes out of dormancy, and this is even worse, of course, if we happen to get a warm spell. And the problem is that the plant then starts giving off water as it tries to photosynthesize and respire and so on, but it can't pull anything up from the roots, so the foliage dries out and turns that attractive rusty orange color.
That's what happens.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks for calling, Chris.
Yeah. You can usually, if you can prune some of that off, it might come back, but if it's
too far along,
if it's too far along, I'd start over.
There you go. Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension horticulture educator, our guest here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guest Lisa Johnson. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer today, answering the phone with her bright and lively and fun-filled voice when you call in at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us. She'll pick those off, too, at talk@wpr.org, and take a look at our Facebook page, too. You know, the Larry Mueller Facebook page has something like 968 friends.
Wow. Impressive.
Well, we want to get to 1,000. So if you're not a member of my Facebook page, and frankly, you don't have to be on Facebook to be a member yourself to join my page. You just go to The Larry Mueller Show, and let's get this over top this over 1,000. I think it's 968. I'll have to take a look.
I'll send out a call to the master gardeners.
There we go. We got some great photos and some nice chat back and forth. So it's a fun page. Ann in Wausau, we give you a chance now. Hi, Ann.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. We have a home actually quite a bit north of Wausau, and we are on a lake. We don't want to use any chemicals or anything. But we've got a problem with wild raspberries just encroaching on everything. And, you know, where we used to have fields of daisies, they're crowding out everything. And we tried chopping them up, and it seemed to make them multiply last year. So I'm wondering what you would suggest.
Yeah, they are very difficult to get rid of, even with something like Roundup. And I know you don't want to use chemicals, but about all that you can do if you don't want to use chemicals is dig them up. And it will take you a while, might take a few years, but you should be able to eventually get rid of them.
Okay.
It will take a lot of vigilance on your part.
Yeah, because their roots go all over the place.
Yeah, I know. And the easiest way, of course, to get rid of them is to cut them to the ground and paint a little Roundup on the cut stump. That does stay in the root system of the plant.
That wouldn't go into the water system?
No.
Okay.
So you might want to consider that. That would be a lot less shovel work for you.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, I thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks a lot for calling, Ann. And let's move on to Dick in the UP, Upper Peninsula. Hi, Dick.
Hello. Thank you. Yeah, I'm very lucky to be able to get Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm close to Escanaba, get it out of Sister Bay, Ellison Bay.
Oh, great.
Lucky. Here's an odd one. Some property I have, a huge tree, blew over last winter. It was a bat tree, hollow.
Oh, huh.
Hundreds of pounds of decades-old bat guano.
Oh, man.
Wow.
Is that a blessing or not?
Well, it's good. I think it's pretty good fertilizer.
Yeah, it's good fertilizer. They do sell it. I would assume it's been well composted.
It's pretty rich, I would imagine.
Yeah, I think you could use that. I wouldn't see a problem with it. Yeah.
It would be. It's very, very good fertilizer.
Mm-hmm. It's very old. And one piece of advice: I used to work for the Michigan DNR and got into some old buildings and swept up without a mask. That guano.
Oh,
I would not advise
not
anybody
so...
doing that.
No.
And of course, when you take it out of this tree, you're going to wear
it's
a mask.
Wet. Yeah, it's wet and it's.
Oh,
old,
okay. Well, so. That helps. But
yeah. It's. Yeah, it's just really weird, but I don't want to waste it. Cause
no,
I
don't waste it.
Yeah.
Don't waste it.
Yep.
Thanks,
well,
Dick.
WPR is it for me. I don't watch TV.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate that call. Well, that's nice.
Larry rocks.
Well, I tell you what, we've got a caller from Stevens Point up next, Steve. Let's go to Steve. Hi, Steve.
Hello. I have an indoor lemon tree that my wife bought at a garage sale last year.
Mm-hmm.
We just moved. It's been a pretty cool winter for it, and we just noticed last week that all of the leaves are crispy and dry. They're still green, so I don't know if we noticed it right away.
You mean they're crispy on the edges, or?
No, they're crispy all the way through.
But they're still green.
But they're still bright, as bright and green as you can stand. So I don't know if it's something that's going to come back or if the tree has died.
Well, it doesn't sound real good. Are there any buds on the tree? Any new buds? If the new buds are also crispy, then I'm afraid you have a crispy critter, and it's probably not going to come back.
Okay. Yeah, I don't see any buds that are coming out yet. I don't know if it would.
Is the soil very dry?
No, we've actually, since we've noticed that the leaves are dry, we've put a humidifier on it, so the air around it is a little more moist, and we have been watering the soil all the time, but we have we use wood heat in the house, so I think it's very dry.
Oh, did you have it close to the wood stove?
No. Okay. No, it's on a different floor from the wood stove, but it's near a window in a cool part of the house. And
you mind if there's a branch you could cut off just to see, or cut into just to see if it's, if there's anything white in there.
Yeah, or green. If you scratch the bark and there's green there, then at least the vascular system is still alive and you might be able to get it come back. But if it's brown all the way through, then
it's
probably toasty.
Right. Is there anything special I should do if it is green in order to get it to come back, or just the regular?
Don't water it every day. I'd water it about once a week. And you might want to take it out of the pot just briefly and take a look at the roots. See if the roots are white and healthy. You're in good shape. If they're brown, well, what I'm trying to figure out is what caused this problem. Was it because it dried out, or was it because it got root rot somehow or other?
Too much water.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So it's not looking good. I'm sorry.
No.
I hate to be the bearer of bad news.
we'll see how it goes. Thank you for the help.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. I mean, an email from Blanchardville. Is there anything that should not be pruned right now?
Oh, yes. All of the spring blooming shrubs, such as lilacs and... I'm blanking right now, but
anything that blooms
in spring, because you'll cut off all the flower buds. So you want to wait on the spring blooming shrubs until after they flower to do major pruning on them.
And Troy in Green Bay says, my wife and I want to build a 20 by 20 foot, 6-inch high raised garden bed on top of a mostly clay side yard. First, is the height okay? 6 inches? Is that okay? It's a little short.
It's a little shallow. You'd probably want more like 8 to 10 inches. So if you use 2 4-inch diameter boards.
Better off for sure.
Or not diameter, but width.
Width.
Yeah. And I think usually when people do raised beds, they do them so that they're easy to harvest from both sides. Of the bed, you'll have to, if I'm understanding what you're doing, you'll have to climb up into the bed and you'd be compacting some of the soil. You probably would be better off building a number of small raised beds than one big one, just for ease of planting and harvest and so on.
And they look nice.
They look
very nice.
We have used, we use these composite plastic and wood decking boards that we get from the local home improvement store. And the nice thing about them is that they don't rot. They're going to be around for a while. But you can also use pressure-treated lumber. Don't use the lumber that has been treated with copper preservative products.
Noelle in Arlington, on to you now. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a question as it relates to apple trees. I have 3 apple trees, a yellow and 2 reds. They're approximately 40 years old.
Oh, my goodness.
I've been pruning them back for the last 5 years, keeping the verticals off, and have slowly taken branches off to keep the inside open.
Mm-hmm.
They were not pruned when I bought the property.
Uh-huh.
They produce the best tasting apples. One comes on after frost, and it is the most succulent, just lush. One is yellow, and you got to get them right away, or they get soft, but they're delicious. So I have 2 issues. How hard do I cut back the trees, and when to take out the verticals? And then the other issue is I have little worms that show up in the apples, and trying to stay completely organic, and aside from bagging every apple, what can I do?
Well,
should I keep them, I guess?
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's start back at the pruning questions before I forget those. With the pruning out of the water sprouts in the branches and with the pruning out of the suckers from the bottom, most of your major pruning is done this time of year. Some apple growers, if they have a lot of trees, will start while the snow is still in the ground in, you know, February or late February, anytime during March. You can do that. You can also take out suckers and water sprouts during the growing season, particularly if they're hampering your harvesting efforts. It sounds like you've done a really good job of pruning these apples back for 5 years and getting them into a state where they are starting to bear. That's kudos to you, because that's with a 40-year-old tree. That's wow, that's pretty amazing.
Thanks.
So your other question about, well, it's probably apple maggot or coddling moth. There are some lures that you can get for those. Great Lakes. Oh, let's see. What is it called? Great Lakes. It's a company that produces the yellow sticky cards and the red sticky balls that you put in the trees to help catch the insects. And you can also subscribe to the Wisconsin Pest Bulletin. If you Google that, that'll get you to the Department of Ag site. And that comes out every week and tells you what pests to expect and, you know, what's coming down the pike next. Without either bagging or netting, there are these little net bags you can get for the apples. You can try kale and clay. That's an organic spray. You can try neem oil.
What type of oil?
Neem. It's from the neem plant, N-E-E-M. And let's see, there are so many organic apple growing resources out there on the web. I'm not really sure where to start. There's some information through the Eco Apple Program. Because this is like a 3-hour question you've asked me here, so I'm trying to just give you some resources to go to. You might also try our apple growing publication on the Learning Store site, learningstore.uwex.edu. So the kale and clay, the neem oil, and so on. When you do spray the kale and clay, although it does help quite a bit with the insects, just to let you know, it will turn your leaves gray and your fruits gray, so you do have to clean them off, but it is a good organic alternative.
That was kaolin or chaolin?
It's K-A-O-L-I-N.
Oh, okay, like almost like oil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a clay product that is hydrated, and it forms kind of a slurry that you spray on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it.
Good luck with that.
And Kathy in Stone Lake, it is your turn. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. I have a question about fertilizing blueberries. I have some half-high blueberries, and I'd like to know what to fertilize them with and when to apply it.
Okay. You can apply blueberry fertilizer in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm assuming, are you using any kind of soil acidifying products?
I put some sulfur on the soil every few years.
Okay. And where are you located?
Stone Lake, near Hayward. It's up in the north.
Oh, okay.
Corner.
All right. So you're not fighting Mother Nature like we are down here. We have such alkaline soil down here. It's always a struggle to grow blueberries, but you're up in blueberry country.
Mm-hmm.
That is excellent. You could use an acid type of fertilizer, like muriatic
acid. Type?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that would work. You can use something like ammonium sulfate. but that usually comes in a big bag. Mm-hmm. Any kind of acidifying nitrogen fertilizer.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for calling. And Frank in Cedarburg, on to you. Hi, Frank.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have a question in regards to ammonium nitrate fertilizer.
Mm-hmm.
I have a bag in our shed that's been open for about a year now. Can I expect there to be see any denitrification going on? And if it doesn't denitrificate, how can I expect nitrogen to work if I use it over, you know?
Okay, I am not a soils expert, but my understanding is that with denitrification, most of that is going to happen as a result of either the fertilizer getting wet or very hot. And so if it hasn't been either one of those, I think you'll be doing pretty well. And I think the product that's more towards the middle of the bag probably wouldn't be affected by any of that. So I think if it's only a year old and you've had it under cover, that you should be okay.
Yep.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Help me out a lot.
All righty.
Thanks for calling in. Lucy in Eau Claire, on to you. Hi, Luce. Oops. Hold on a second. First, I have to push the button hard enough to get around. Hi, Lucy.
Hi. See, I have a question about dogwoods. I'm really having a tough time trying to find a pagoda dogwood, you know, Cornus alternifolia.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why that is, because when I've done some research, the silky and the gray dogwood are still appealing to birds, but not nearly as many species listed as feeding off of them as the pagoda. And I'm just
And the pagoda's native here.
Yeah.
So I'm just not sure why people aren't.
Did you try Jung's?
Jung's in the catalog?
Yeah.
I haven't verified. Yeah, I can look. I have a catalog.
It's usually a fairly
easy thing to find.
That's really interesting. I don't know whether the one problem that it does have is there's a disease called golden canker that's a twig dieback disease where the branches will turn kind of a yellowish orange color, hence the name golden canker. But I have not heard that is stopping people from growing it and selling it and so on.
I've looked at a few nurseries in the area, and they have the other dogwoods, but they just don't have that one.
Yeah, try Jung's.
Yeah.
And there might be others.
Is that
out
a real
there?
Big problem with suckering with the dogwood then?
It does get some suckers. Most of them are thicket forming plants, so they do have some suckers. You know, you get a few. It's not anything like red twig dogwood or some of the other more shrubby species. Gray dogwood, for example, you really get a thicket that forms as well, but not so much with the pagoda.
Okay. Well, thanks very much.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks a lot for calling. An email from Becky in Madison. Every winter, the rabbits eat my purple summer-bearing raspberry canes. She tries to cage them, but the snow's too deep and they get in anyway.
Oh.
I'd like to plant fall or ever-bearing varieties to fix this problem. Will that solve the problem? The rabbits can mow them down in the winter for me.
Yeah, okay. With ever-bearing ones, yeah, the rabbits probably still will eat them, but as you pointed out, with the ever-bearing types, each year what comes up is basically a new primacane, or a new floricane, because they bear on a one-year cycle instead of a two-year cycle. So that shouldn't really matter if they eat them down in the winter, as long as they don't eat them all the way into the ground. That should be fine.
How about pruning a crabapple tree? Dana Lynn wants to know in Ellsworth. I know that I should have pruned it in February. Haven't yet. We've had daytime temperatures in the low 40s the last 3 days. Also, we have a small cherry tree that needs to have a significant limb removed. Is it too late to do that?
No.
No, I wouldn't say so.
No, usually you can go into early April. depending on the weather, of course, before you start to have the buds come out of dormancy. So it should be just fine still.
By the way, do you have any ever-bearing raspberries that you would recommend? Varieties, I'm saying?
Autumn Britain and Caroline.
Okay. Let's go to Janet in Oak Creek. Hi, Janet.
Hello, how are you?
Great, thanks for calling.
Good. I have a question regarding alliums.
Uh-huh.
I really love growing them.
They are cool.
Yeah, the smaller ones seem to be really easy, and they come back. They spread sometimes somewhat invasive.
Yeah. I know what you mean.
Yeah, and the larger ones, my very favorite is Shaberti. And
yes.
And the Cristofori is, you know, coming mm-hmm. in second. But those seem to last maybe a year or two, and then they just kind of disappear, and I'm just wondering why, what's going on with those? Are they rotting, or is it just they're maybe not quite as perennial as I'm thinking they are?
Well, I'm noticing that you're from Oak Creek, and I'm guessing you have pretty heavy clay soil?
Very heavy, very wet.
Yeah, they are probably rotting then. they don't like that too well. What you might be able to do is grow them in pots. Or if you have an area of your yard where you want to put in a small berm, you might be able to grow them that way. But yeah, the Shubertii and the Christofii are absolutely gorgeous. Every time they bloom in the teaching garden, somebody comes into the office and says, "What are those?" And usually the Christofii, the Star of Persia, seed pretty heavily. So I have the opposite problem. I'm always making sure that, oh gosh, have they gone to seed yet? I better get the seed heads out of there or we're going to have an invasion. So, yeah, I think it's your heavy soil and probably also the pH. Your area tends to have fairly alkaline soil too.
If I would put the bulbs in pots, does that then need to go into the garage or can it stay out, or is that dependent on the size of the pot?
It's dependent on the size of the pot. You could also try sinking the pot into the soil and see if that helps. The thing is, you'd need to put the pot on top of some gravel or something so that when it rains that it does run through and not just puddle up under the pot because it's still mm-hmm. clay soil under there. With the Shubertii, it's a little less hardy, but again, you're close to Milwaukee. Do you know if you're zone 6 or zone 5?
I believe I'm zone 5.
Okay. Yeah. If you can put them in the garage with some, I don't know, straw bales or some styrofoam or something around them, you'd have a better chance of bringing them through that way.
All right. Well, I'll give that a try then. Thank you so much.
Thanks very much for calling.
Oh, I was going to recommend Pinball Wizard. That's another very cool allium.
And what makes them so striking? What do they look like? So
it looks like a big lollipop or a big ball on top of a stem, and a lot of them are quite tall.
Yeah.
And the flower heads, well, on Shubertii, they're
size big,
of
like a basketball.
Yeah, exactly. And
they are beautiful.
Yeah, very different than anything else in the garden.
Let's go to Michelle in Madison. Well, we'll get to you in just a minute, Michelle. I want to remind everybody, Lisa Johnson, our guest today, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. I'm Larry Mueller here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Lots of callers online here on the Ideas Net for Garden Talk. And Michelle in Madison, we turn to you now. Thank you for waiting. Hi.
Hi. I have a question. We had a bunch of pine trees in our backyard, and therefore we didn't have any grass growing very well. We've now removed the pine trees recently, and we want to know what we should do to prepare the ground for the grass to grow better.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about your soil.
Well, I don't know. I don't know that much about it. I'm not very much.
It's in Madison.
It's in Madison, so it's got some clay in it, I assume.
Yeah.
Okay. One thing about pines is that they typically have kind of shallow root systems. So you might be running into those as you try and get your lawn back to snuff. What I would do is I would get some compost or some topsoil and mix it in lightly with that existing soil. Make sure you mix it up well. And are you going to seed or are you going to sod?
Probably seed.
Okay.
I mean, you're going to get some black dirt to go in there. They took out the stumps and stuff. So.
Okay.
I mean, do we need to, we're going to rake up the pine needles and stuff and get rid of those. I'm assuming that's necessary.
No, actually not.
Oh.
There is some mythology out there that pine needles are highly acid, and they're really not. So you could use that in your soil to help lighten up your soil, just as some organic matter. Then, you know, you wouldn't have to. But if they're piled thick in some areas, I would spread them out.
Okay.
Just so that you don't have a drainage issue and you have good seed-to-soil contact.
Okay.
There are a number of different places that you can get seed. And is your area, are there other trees shading that area or...
Is there what? Say that again.
Are there other trees shading that area, or is it now pretty open?
Not anymore. It's pretty open.
Okay, great.
Yeah
just, you know, till lightly. Usually they recommend that you run a, I want to say steamroller, but that's not right, a roller over the area to make sure that the soil is firmed but not packed down, and that you don't have lumps and bumps in it, so you kind of flatten it out.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Okay, great.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And an email from Benita in Muscadet. Yesterday I dug some of my parsnips that I left in the ground over the winter. Last summer I had tops that were lush at about 2 feet tall. Expected to get some nice parsnips, but have some that are 3 to 4 inches in diameter, but 2 inches long. That's weird. All have several what I would call legs. Not a nice straight parsnip. I know what she's talking about.
Yeah, and she's on sandy soil.
Yeah, hollow crown parsnip she planted. Hmm. Any suggestions on how to get a nice shaped parsnip?
That is
I wonder how they were last fall.
Yeah, or in the past if she's grown them. In the same place and so on. I don't have any suggestions for that. I'm not real sure why that happened if she's on sandy soil. She could try adding some compost to the soil. Maybe they're just not getting enough nutrition. A lot of the root crops need a lot of calcium and potassium. So maybe it's just not a real good fertile area to grow them.
Barb and Madison, we're on to you now. Hi, Barb.
Like to know what to do on the lawn that is been run on by a truck to reach a huge tree and cut it and remove it. The ground was still frozen when this was done, but it's bumpy and there's some gouges. And of course, it looks awful because the surface is muddy. It was already melting some. My son would like to use a roller on it, and I said, oh, no, maybe an aerator.
Yes, that's what I would recommend, a core aerator.
And then roll it?
No, I wouldn't roll it. If it's been compacted, you need to get air into it and, you know, allow more water percolation and so on.
Okay.
What I'd do is I'd core aerate it and then maybe put some shredded bark mulch.
Mm-hmm.
On it, unless you grew, did you grow turf there before? Or
yeah,
what?
there was a mowed lawn there before, which is already bumpy.
Yeah.
But you can
level it out a bit
with
a
rake.
After you've core aerated it.
But not rather than rolling it.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for calling. And Elizabeth in Boscobel. Hi.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Well, a few years ago, we decided to try to do some gardening, and we wanted to do organic as much as possible. And I had in my head from somewhere that we should start saving our eggshells. We have probably a gallon of eggshells, and I don't know what to do with them. And well, I figured, I actually know Lisa. We used to teach together about 12 years ago, so I thought I would take her advice on this.
Oh, my gosh. Is this Elizabeth from Egg Journalism?
Yes, it is.
Well, then Larry probably knows you, too. Oh, gosh. Well, this is so cool. Well, eggshells.
They were traditionally thought to add
some calcium. The problem is that our area and Boscobel as well has plenty of calcium in the soil, so you don't really need to use that. If you wanted to, you could certainly grind them up and put them in the soil. They don't add a whole lot of calcium, but you know, you can use them. One thing they do worry about a little bit is salmonella. Factor that into your...
They're well-aged.
They're well-aged. Okay.
Well, then you could break
Our soil, we've actually done raised beds with most, you know, it's lasagna gardening. We've got compost in there because our lot that we're trying to do our gardening on was actually a parking lot at one point.
Uh-huh.
And so it's just
a little compacted.
Gravel.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, they put gravel on top of the nice black soil. So,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So in that situation, would the calcium be useful or is it still just kind of extra grit?
It would be extra grit.
Okay.
Would it have any, I wonder, would it have any value on slugs for...
It could possibly, around hostas. Yeah, because when it's ground up, you could use it in the same way people use diatomaceous earth.
Okay.
So if you have any, like if they go after your lettuce or something, you could put it around the base of the lettuce to try and discourage the slugs from climbing up.
Okay.
Or sliming up. I guess they don't climb. It's good to hear from you, Elizabeth.
Meanwhile, I think I'll stop saving my eggshells.
Okay. I think that's probably a good idea.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Yeah. Bye-bye. We run them through the sink and when the grinder, I'm just blanked on the name there suddenly, but anyway, it kind of cleans out
the goo.
The goo. Helps clean out the goo anyway. Let's go to Craig in Marathon. Hi, Craig.
Hello. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering about trimming a magnolia tree. We planted one a couple of years ago, and there's a lot of stems coming off the bottom. I actually think it was probably root-bound in the pots. It sat at the nursery for quite mm-hmm. a while. How drastic do we...
Oh, well, if there are straight stems coming up from the base of the main stem, you can take all those out. Those are suckers coming from the root system. Some of the magnolias are grafted. Some of them are on their own roots. Do you know what kind it is by any chance?
I don't know.
Okay. Has it bloomed for you at all up there in Marathon?
They haven't yet, no.
Okay. Most of them are only bud hardy to about zone 5. There are some, like the cucumber magnolia, that are hardier than that. Let us know what happens.
Yeah. It was, it was planted for a wedding, and it was kind of, I mean, I didn't think it was very hardy, actually, for our area.
Yeah.
So when I said, well, what happens if it dies, that didn't go over real well.
Uh-oh. You know,
for the wedding, you know, the meaning of it all.
Oh, dear.
Oh, well.
Would you see a single stem, is that?
It depends. You can grow them as a multiple stem or a single stem. If some of those branches, if you want to keep a few of them coming out at the base, that's fine. It, you know, some of them are meant to be tree form and sold that way, and others are sold as multi-stem shrub forms.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Thanks a lot for calling, Craig. Somebody else, regarding the eggshells that Elizabeth mentioned earlier, somebody says they use eggshells around tomatoes to prevent blossom end rot.
Well,
Oh, and I think it goes back to that calcium idea.
Yes,
again.
Right. It's not that there's not enough calcium in the soil, unless, of course, they're growing on a sandy soil. It's going to take a while, though, because the calcium has to be oxidized such that it is in solution.
Yeah.
All nutrients plants' roots take up have to be in solution. Otherwise, it's like trying to suck a brick through a straw. Doesn't work very well. And the problem is not that, especially here in southern Wisconsin, that we don't have enough calcium in the soil. It's that if the moisture supply to your tomato isn't constant, then the developing fruit can't pull up the calcium quickly enough for its proper development. So we usually see blossom end rot in years when we have some drought, that it's been really hot and dry, and maybe the tomato has gotten a little too dry in between waterings or rain, as the case may be. I think a better thing to do would be to use some mulch around the tomato plant to help keep the soil more cool and moist, and to make sure that you don't let it dry out too much.
Mm-hmm. There we go. Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, our guest here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Lisa Johnson, on this edition of Garden Talk. Great to have her with us. She's Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. You can join in with questions at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Perry in Madison's been waiting a while, Lisa, so let's go right to Perry. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Larry. Hey, Lisa. Great program. I live outside of Madison, and I have a circular driveway, and in the middle of that driveway, I'd like to plant an aspen grove. And I didn't know if there's a particular variety that I should be looking for this climate.
Okay, from Madison.
Yeah. Well, the variety that I guess I would use would be the quaking aspen, but I'm not sure whether that's the best thing to do because you got to remember that they do have the cotton. And it can be kind of nasty.
Messy in June.
Yeah, messy. I mean, they get beautiful fall color, and yes, the nice white trunks are good, but they tend to be somewhat disease-prone and not to live real long. So I would try and find a male cultivar if possible, and I would try to find a cultivar that is disease resistant as well.
Okay, great. Thank you
all
very
right.
much.
Thanks. Uh-huh. Thanks a lot for calling. Chet in Athens, Wisconsin. Hi.
Good morning. I bought some Connecticut Field seeds from Young's Nursery last spring, and I had good luck with the crop. And now in the field, I have quite a few of this pumpkin still there with seed pack inside. Would it be possible to plant those seeds this spring, or should I buy new?
You should buy new, and the reason for that is that with the cucurbits, a lot of them don't tend to come true. It takes about 12 visits by a bee to pollinate a squash or a cucurbit. And depending on what species of cucurbit the pollen came from, you might get some pretty interesting, interesting pumpkins, squash sort of things. So I would not reuse that seed. Also, I'm not sure if it's been frozen over the winter that it's going to be viable yet. So I would get new seeds so that you know what you're going to get. And
all right, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And let's turn to, oh, by the way, we're at 984 people on the
Woo-hoo!
Larry Mueller Facebook page. So thanks to everybody who's already joined that page. We're trying to get to 1,000 for this show. So we still have 16 more people to sign up to get to a nice round number.
Any
of
master
1,000.
Gardeners out there, go to Larry's Facebook page.
Yeah,
What's the
just go to The Larry Mueller Show. There you go. And we were at 968, I think, when we started. Yeah. So pretty good. Kevin in Prairie du Sac. Hello.
Good afternoon. I've got about a 25-foot square vegetable garden that I've had for about 15 years. Over the last 7 years, I've gone to mulching it with the leaves from my one-acre lot. So in the fall, it'll be 2 to 3 feet deep all the way across. The last couple of years, I haven't been very happy with my yield, so the very first time ever, I went and had my soil tested by the UW Extension, and to my surprise, I just needed a little sulfur and some nitrate. The system has worked as far as, I mean, I don't pull weeds.
There's a lot to be said for that.
And that's why I do it. So it'll be 2 or 3 feet in the fall and gradually go down. By harvest time, there's no leaves left, and we start the process over. So my question is there anything long-term or anything I need to be concerned about doing that on a regular basis? I tilled it last fall for the first time in probably 7 years just because I wanted to get the sulfur into the soil.
Tell me what type of trees you're using the leaves from.
Almost anything but walnuts. I mean, I have a lot of maple. I have one oak. I have a lot of some mountain ash and a lot of, what do you call the things, the Chinese elms.
Mm.
Okay.
Should be all right.
It should be okay. I'm glad you're avoiding walnut. Hickory is another one to avoid. Sounds fine
okay to me.
As long as, you know, as you're having good yields and the plants, it doesn't seem too wet so that the plants are not, you know, so that the water isn't draining. As long as you don't have those problems, that sounds great.
Yep.
Not having weeds, I mean.
Yeah,
that's
what's great.
That's a lovely, lovely thing.
If I had to pull weeds, I wouldn't have a garden. So, if not broke, don't fix it.
All right. Thanks, Kevin. Thanks a lot for calling. You know, I was talking about mulch. Kathy in Madison wondered, in terms of incorporating compost into the soil or mulch, I suppose, too, how can you tell when it's a good time to till without causing compaction?
Well, it's one of those balancing act sort of things. It also depends on the texture of your soil. If your soil is pretty heavy clay, you have to wait for it to dry out enough so that when you take it and squish it in your hand that it doesn't turn into a brick.
Yeah.
If it all sticks together and it feels pretty sticky, it's probably still too wet. And I would, if you have that kind of soil, I would do as you're suggesting and putting in some compost to help lighten it up a little bit. That's a really good thing to do.
And Gina in Madison has a mint patch. Now 10 by 10, it's creeping into her compost, and she wants to get rid of it.
Good luck.
She has a dog, so if you recommend an herbicide, one that breaks down relatively quickly, and please recommend that anyone planting mint in their yards plant it in a buried pot to limit its escape. And isn't that the truth?
Yeah. I only grow it in pots, but I put them above ground. The problem, if you put them below ground, they will usually jump the rim of the pot, the top rim, and spread out into the surrounding landscape. Mint is, you're right, very aggressive. You can try digging it out because the roots are fairly shallow if you're worried about the dog. However, if you are willing to use an herbicide, I probably would recommend Roundup again because it does break down more quickly than most herbicide products.
And an email from George in Waukon, Iowa. I've tried to grow Brussels sprouts for the last few years, but the heads never form, only loose leaves form. Plants are otherwise very big and healthy. I bought plants from the nursery and planted them from seed, tried that, same result. Any ideas on what the problem might be?
If you use a lot of nitrogen fertilizer, that might possibly affect it. Brussels sprouts. I'm not coming up with anything at this very moment, but I'll check on that and see. try and remember what the story is with Brussels sprouts, because that's ringing a faint bell.
While you're looking at that, I'm going to get back to the eggshells for a minute and Elizabeth's earlier calls. Two callers have called in about the importance of eggshells for birds during nesting season.
Oh, yeah, for grit.
They need the calcium to make their own shells strong. One person just scatters crushed shells and the birds pick them up. Another grinds it fine and adds it to bird seed in feeders. So couple of good uses for eggshells. So, Elizabeth, hang on to those eggshells. especially if you've got a bird feeder or birds in your area that nest, that's a great thing to do. And let's see, we have more callers online. Have you finding anything there?
Not finding anything.
Okay.
I was trying to remember whether there was a nutritional thing. Pulling it out of the old brain.
somebody may call in and have an answer or a suggestion. So we'll try that. What type of soil? Ann emailed wonders about soil for starting tomatoes and peppers from seed. You know, some potting soil.
From seed, I usually use a special seeding mix. There are a number of them out there on the market. We use, there's a product by Fafard. There's a product called Jiffy Mix. Basically, what it is ground up vermiculite. And the thing is that it's very light, very easy for roots to penetrate, drains well, but yet holds some moisture in. And I've always had really good germination with that. Potting soil, I wouldn't really use because it's coarser and the seeds tend to work their way down into the profile and get lost. So I would try that.
Thomas and Arborvita, on to you. Hi, Tom.
Hello there. I run into something real weird, I think. Anyway, a plant that my son gave my wife and myself for Christmas, unfortunately, I don't know what it is. It's not a plant that you can, it's got nothing lower than 50 degrees or something, otherwise the plant has problems. It ain't an outdoor plant. I'm sitting next to the window in the front of, in the living room, and I happen to brush against the plant with my hand. It's maybe about 2 feet round, 3-4 feet high, and a 2 foot round ball of leaves and stuff. Anyway, I seen some little things. It went into the air like real fine lint or something, and I touched it again, and about 4 or 5 went on my hand, and they were about only a 1/64 of real.
Yeah.
Real fine, so I took my jeweler's glass, and which is about 60 power, and I looked at it. I could count the legs. There were 6 legs, had 2 black eyes, and it looked almost like one of those quarter-inch-long jumping little grasshoppers that get on your pants in the summertime, and you touch it, and it would jump, but it got the same wing variation. It looks the same, and then I saw on 2 different kinds of puncturing tools. One had a black spike coming down between its 2 eyes, which I could see. Well, a jeweler's glass or something else.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one was a clear puncturing tool. It's amazing. They're real pretty when I looked at it with the glass, but it almost reminded me of chicken lice or something. When you put it in there and it'd be on you, and you wouldn't know what they were, just that they would be red. But this was a little bug.
Yeah.
Okay. It's got wings. Are the wings
around? And there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them.
Oh dear. Are the wings white?
They look like a dark ivory color.
Yeah. No white.
Okay. And are they hanging out underneath the?
They just fold beautiful together. Like it looked, like I said, that little grasshopper in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
They're under the leaves, or are they on top of the leaves?
They're underneath.
Yeah, underneath.
Okay, that's probably white flies, especially if they came out when you moved the plant. If you've got hundreds and hundreds of them.
Oh, I even went with a vacuum, I went a hand vacuum cleaner. I must have took off about 500 of them. I wouldn't doubt it.
Oh, then you might want to get the plant out of your house if you have any other house plants.
Well, I wouldn't even care if I lost it. I mean, it's something. I was more curious about something I've never seen in my life.
Yeah, the white flies often will attack house plants. Now, if we were closer to spring, I'd advise you to put it outside and beneficial insects would take care of it. But they're not quite here yet. It's still a little cold for them. I would put it in a bag very carefully and get it, say goodbye. And they are interesting.
I maybe I could even confuse you with this one.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I don't know. Well, yeah, you could probably put it in a bag with some sort of.
Yeah, close the bag tightly and.
And put a. Could you put a strip of something in there?
Well, you can. Usually what they recommend are various spray products, but it's really hard to get rid of white flies because the darn adults have that habit of flying away when you're trying to spray them. And the sprays don't kill all the eggs either, at least none that I can think of. You might be able to use something like neem oil, but if you've got 500 of them on one 2-foot plant, I'd say it's time to pull the plug.
Get rid of the plant.
Yeah.
All right.
I thank you much for the information.
All right.
Sure.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Rod in Birchwood, on to you now. Hi, Rod.
Hi, good afternoon. Question I've got is one of the Forest Service came in and cleaned up around our property. And I want to put in more blackberries and raspberries.
Okay.
What would be the fastest way to get them to propagate?
Do you have some already there, you're saying?
Yeah, we do.
You can usually do root divisions in the spring.
Okay.
And, it's basically dividing the little thickets as they come up. So that's that's the fastest way.
Instead of taking them from, like, buying a bunch of seeds?
Oh, it'll take a while from seed. Or if you can, I'm sorry, I thought you wanted to propagate the ones that you had.
I can take them, too, but it's like I got 40 acres, and they went around a perimeter, and I want to put in, like, a barrier more for the animals.
I see. Well, then you might want to get divisions from, like Jung's or some other bare root purveyor of black raspberries.
Yeah. But
okay.
Yeah, it shouldn't be a problem.
Seed takes a long time
before you
get anything.
I know certain areas they're up there and they're in groups so thick you can't even walk through. And in some areas you only find one or two.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Go in there and divide them out.
That's what I'll have to do.
Yep.
Another thing too with hostas.
Yes.
Is there something I can use with the hostas to keep the deer away?
Oh, boy.
fence.
Yeah, fence is about... You can try... There is a product called Liquid Fence that you can spray. It smells absolutely revolting. My office mate, Ann, when I use it out in the teaching garden, doesn't want me back in the office anymore. But...
Liquid Fence, okay.
Yeah, and you do have to... If you start applying it early in the season before the leaves are expanded all the way, then you do have to reapply as new leaf tissue comes out. But that's one possibility. A fence is probably the best one, however.
Electric fence.
Yeah, there you go.
Actually,
on an area where there's no power, so I have to go at a solar or something on that area.
Yeah, you can, and a one-strand fence can work.
Yeah.
It can work for deer.
So. Yeah, that's what I think I'm going to try. I took care of them last year.
All right.
Might be faster and easier in the long run.
Good luck, Rod. Thank you very much for calling. Connie says, everybody told me to carry over the most beautiful potted geranium from last year, so I did. Put it in the basement. A room, dry, typically dark. It's put on some growth, and we have watered it occasionally. What do we do now?
Well, it's good time to ask that, because usually you start seeing some new growth around the end of March or so. Usually, if you have it in a pot like you have, you can bring it upstairs into the light, cut it back a bit, especially if the new growth is looking kind of leggy, which I wouldn't be surprised if it's been trying to grow in the dark, and start watering it regularly. And that's about
that's
it.
That's what you need. Lori in Shawano County, on to you now. Hi, Lori.
Hi there. Question about tomatoes. The last 2 years, our tomatoes have grown almost to full size, still green, but then started to develop black spots on them, and then they never really ripened. So we, even though we had a pretty large batch of tomato plants, we never got any real yield out of them.
The spots are on the fruit?
Pardon?
The spots are on the fruit?
Yes.
And concentrated at the bottom of the fruit?
Not at the bottom. It would be the side that's exposed more up to the top, or the, you know, the sunlight side, not the ground side. So it's not like they're rotting, but it's they're black spots.
How small? Probably, or how big?
Larger.
Larger spots.
Probably an inch to 2 inches area, you know, where it didn't look like it was rotting, but it was just kind of a weird kind of patch, and it would, I don't know, it's kind of unusual, and it's happened the last 2 years where we haven't really gotten any type of yield out of the, and I should say that we've just started gardening again, and we're actually on the edge of a farm field that is either typically in corn or soybeans, and it's full sun.
There are so many different tomato diseases that have black spots. Are they like the size of a dime, or?
I'd say more a quarter or larger.
A quarter or larger. Okay. And let's see. Is anything on the leaves or on the stems? Have you noticed any spots there?
Yeah, some of the leaves would get kind of dry and brown, but not black spots.
Okay. You didn't see gray fuzzy? Yeah. Did you see
I wouldn't say that it's fuzzy.
Okay. Well, that rules out what I think I can.
I didn't know if it was maybe something that we either had in the soil or is lacking in the soil, because we have other vegetables that we plant in that area that have done fine. It just seems like we're not having any luck with the tomatoes.
Do you have peppers and eggplants?
We did have peppers, and they're pretty bountiful.
Okay.
Don't have any problems with those.
Well, then it's probably not blossom end rot, and there are some other things that tomatoes and peppers are both susceptible to. What I would do is I'd check with Brian Huddleston at the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic in Madison.
Let's go to the UW Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic online. You could post that question to him.
Yeah.
And he would probably have an answer. He'd have some guesses anyway. It's a tough one. There's so many diseases.
Yeah, poor tomatoes. They get everything.
Everything imaginable. And, boy, with that, we're going to have to conclude, Lisa.
Oh, my goodness. We're done already?
The time went by pretty quickly
it
here.
It does.
Thank you so much. Somebody, by the way, said they mowed their mint really close twice. They mowed it down right to the ground, and that took care of it. But
wow.
That's lucky.
Yeah, I think so.
Lisa, thank you so much. We'll look forward to our next visit. Lisa Johnson, UW Extension Horticulture Educator, our guest today. Just to let you know, Monday, Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody talk about how to jump back into warmer weather activities without injury. And Tuesday, we'll talk about the world of insects with Phil Pelletieri. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.